Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast, episode 11. I'm Dan Tomlinson. I'm joined, as always, by Rich Harrison. How are you doing, pal?
Very well,
thank you. Yeah, not bad, mate. Not bad at all. Despite our crashing back down to earth last night, Hull FC, with the fans return at the KCOM Stadium. 5,527 souls there to see it. A disappointing result, it must be said, and display going down 27-10 to Catalans. I suppose typical Hull FC in many respects.
We tend to do that, don't we? Winning a game that you're not expecting us to win and then lose one that you're expecting us to win. It's weird.
Yeah, I must be said, it was a very flat display. It was very laboured, conservative. Hull didn't ask enough questions in attack. But, you know, I must say, before I stick the boat in up to Hull, Catalans were very good, and they're a good side. They've got some cracking players: James Maloney, Sam Tompkins, who obviously Hull people love to hate, but he's a player. Honestly, he's a class act, one of the best in Super League over the past decade. And you know, they've got a big set of forwards. They were got on top of Hull. They were, you know, they outmuscled Hull. I thought they handled everything that Hull threw at them, which admittedly wasn't much. But you play to your opposition, don't you? And that's what they did. You know, they controlled that ruck. They probably took that ruck to the extreme. But if you weren't getting penalised for it, you know, that's what you're doing. It. You test the ref. You'll see what you can get away with. You know, every team does that, from amateur to professional. And yeah, I just thought Catalans were very good.
We've done it first quarter of the season. You know, like you've said, how many times have you said we are a horrible team? You know, we're a horrible, horrible team to play against. And it's because we test. We push it to the absolute limits of legality. And by the sounds of it, I think
we're okay what Catalans did last night. Yeah, literally. That is what they did, and, you know, fair play. We have done that all season. We've got those type of players in our squad now, haven't we? And that's what gets me. When everyone has a pop at Sam Tompkins, it's like, we've got two players in Jake Connor and Josh Reynolds who are exactly like that. And I've got no problems with it. No problems with all. I mean, Tompkins does it. He's just smarter in how he does it. He's smarter about how he engages the referee. He gets the referee on his side. And that's the difference, whereas Connor's seen a little bit of a pantomime villain. I mean, it was funny watching Josh Reynolds for the first time last night. The bloke just doesn't shut up.
Connor is great, mate. It doesn't stop. And they seem to get a try as well on his own debut.
Yeah, I mean, that was obviously the positive thing. It was a cracking try as well. I mean, the ball out to Carlos was excellent. The dummy to follow back on the inside. Yeah, that was obviously a great try. Best moment of the night for sure, but yeah. We have got that grubbiness in our side right now, haven't we? So, as I say, it's just ironic when we have a pop at an opposition player. But Tompkins is outstanding. You know, we said a few weeks ago, didn't we, when we're talking about fullbacks, the best three players in the comp at the time were probably Hardacre, Tompkins and Jake Connor. And, yeah, it's no surprise he had a big influence again last night.
Yeah, he's a good player. And it's the way his influence, isn't it? I mean, that's the thing. He's one of those players that... he makes the players around him better as well. He's not just an individual. You know, he's a proper team player with great individual skill. And, you know, I mean, unfortunately, he didn't really make it over here. But, you know, and there's all of his quite kind of well-publicised personal kind of stuff as well. And, you know, him and his brother, the rectums of Wigan. He's a very, very skillful, very, very good player. Much as it pains me to say so.
Yeah, I mean... True fact sometimes, doesn't it? And he's exactly that. Yeah. And yeah, Jimmy Maloney. So it was nice seeing him in the flesh, obviously, ex-Penrith Panther. He's obviously been an ex-Origin. You know, he had a great career in Australia. He's come over here and had a bit of criticism, to be fair. But I thought he was very good. Like, he was tidy in everything he did, along with Josh Drinkwater, who obviously had a torrid time at Rovers. But he seems to have found a home again at Catalans. So just shows that the grass is obviously greener elsewhere, innit? But yeah, his kicking game was very good. He kept pinning us back. They were just aggressive. They were just out-muscled us. They were more physical than us. Obviously, it goes without saying, you know, no Scott Taylor, no Josh Bowden.
To me, that sounds very much like what they've done. And I will counter this with, I've only seen like the highlights. I haven't seen everything, and obviously you were at the game. But by the sounds of it and by reading the match reports and everything, they've looked at Hull's game last week against Wigan in the Cup, and they've gone, right, we can try to go around the outside of Hull. We can't do that. We've got some really big boppers. Hull are a bit light in the forwards at the moment. They've probably got, you know, one or two props short. Let's just bulldoze them through the middle. Let's slow the ruck down. Let's slow their fast guys down. Let's go straight through the middle. And by the sounds of it, they've just bashed it into submission, which isn't pretty. It's never a pretty game to watch. the war of attrition. And, you know, you'd think that Hodgson will be better for it as a coach. He will have spotted that now, that's obviously a perceived weakness of us, and he's going to have to come up with a tactic to counter that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we just need to see more with what Hull do with the ball. I mean, it's an interesting point you've just said there, because I think what Catalans did last night, Hull, that's exactly what we've done. You know, we did that to Wigan last week. We ground that win out. It wasn't pretty. It was tough. The Wakefield win was exactly the same. You know, the Huddersfield and Salford ones were flamboyant. They were great. That was when our attack was, you know, really hitting its straps early on. Obviously, Reynolds' injury didn't help. Jake Connor's suspension didn't help. We've gone a little bit wayward since. You'd like to think it'll improve as they get continuity in appearances and get a run of games together. But, you know, I think it was a Rovers fan, one of the many limited Rovers fans I actually like on this planet, that commented to me a couple of weeks back saying, don't you think there's not much difference in the Radford to Hodgson performances so far? And I was like, yeah, you are absolutely right, because it is very dogged, it's very resilient, it's all built on defence, and it's not exactly, you know, pretty. It's not sexy, if you like, but it's got the job done so far, and it's obviously those defensive traits, that effort that we've seen week in, week out, that obviously we really appreciate, because we've seen Hull FC sides go by the wayside and, you know, lose by ridiculous margins over the past few years. So obviously that's why we've loved it so much. But
And you've got to remember, this is still Radford's squad. He's added one player into that squad in Reynolds, and that's it. You know, it's the end of this year when he's going to get his fingers into our recruitment and retention. That's when we're going to see what Hodgson is as a coach. That's when we're going to find out whether he is a typical Aussie, you know, defence-heavy, you know, tackling forward coach, or whether he's going to be a bit more swashbuckling and we're going to go out and sign, you know, go out and try and sign players that are more, you know, more attacking minded. So, you know, he's still dealing with the hangover of the Bradford era, really, in which, you know, the side was basically built in the image of Bradford Bulls. You know, big wingers, big centres, making metres coming out of yardage, and then, you know, a wily halfback. You know, basically you can swap out Sneed for Paul Deacon in that sense. You can swap out, you know, Fleur and Farima for, you know, a Vinicola and a Vicona. Almost, you know, it did seem very much like Radford thought that the way to success was to emulate that Bradford Bull side of the early 2000s, late 90s.
Yeah, absolutely. And may take a bit of time for Hodgson to obviously stamp his mark. He wants to bring in, he wants to retain. And obviously we'll see that unfold as the season progresses. I think the best way to describe it is how he's talked about Adam Swift this year, and obviously the opportunities that Adam Swift's got, because he's a completely different type of winger to the Radford mould, to your Freemos and your Finuas. Must be said, my Finua was good last night. No surprise, I think he's a confidence player when he gets that little bit of backing from the fans. You know, he did talk pretty much about the champ when they sing his name, and yeah, he was very good. He took his try well, but his carries in backfield were good too. He was solid. I'm pretty sure he was error-free. You know, no serious blunders or anything like that. He had that was his best game of the season by a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you're right. He's definitely a confidence player. You know, you only look at the try score at Wembley 2016. That kind of carried him for another 6 or 8 months after that. You know, he's one of those guys that, it was the same when he came over here. You know, when he had an extended run in the West Tigers team before the injury and stuff, you could just see he was playing with a smile on his face. He was hitting, he was ripping into the tackle, and you're exactly right. He is pure confidence. That's what he is.
Yeah, absolutely. And as for standouts in the Catalans game, as I say, it was a pretty flat display, but I thought our two starting middles in Chris Satai, in particular Gisau, were good last night. You know, that was a really tough, big Catalans pack, and they stood up well. I thought Manu Mau had a couple of moments as well. I think people saw Manu Mau's highlight reel, and particularly that last year at Parramatta, and thought it was going to be this, you know, this line-breaking edge forward is going to be, you know, throwing crazy offloads out every 2 minutes and, you know, like a Frank Pritchard type player, but he's been more like a Sika Manu. Everything he does is solid. You know, he don't make many errors. He doesn't miss many tackles at all. And
I'll admit, Dan, I was probably a big part of that. as well, because that last year he spent at Parramatta, he was incredible. And he was doing that. He was throwing those crazy passes out and all the rest of it. And I'm probably as guilty as anyone of building people's expectations. Because I mean, I wrote, you know, 3 or 4 times, get excited. You know, he is fantastic. You know, and then he's come on tall and he's been solid. He hasn't been anything other than solid. But, you know, we played a very different way to Parramatta as well, you've got to remember. You know, he's not hit the same lines, and certainly defensively as well. He hasn't hit the same intensity in his defence, I don't think, that he hit at Parramatta. But you know, it's a different club. He only ever played for Parramatta in his life. You know, so this is only his second club, and you'd think it's probably his last club because you know, whether we re-sign him or not, I wouldn't think he'd go around again to another NRL club, and I don't think he'd play for another English club unless someone comes in for him. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know, mate. He just, like you say, he just hasn't hit straps, has he?
No, but I think, like you say, he has been solid in everything, like you say, in everything he's done, just not spectacular, but... Suppose, yeah. When you've had a Minicello, obviously, in his prime years, I mean, 2015, 2016, 2017, he was nothing short of, well, absolutely magnificent, wasn't he? And when that's the bloke you're replacing, it's a big ask.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, he's replacing Sikamani with Mike Minicello. That's adding to nothing,
isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're certainly two of the best modern day summer era overseas signings. I mean, some
and
would probably go.
Gareth Ellis.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
he's
playing that Ellis role as well, isn't
Yeah. I suppose Ellis was an edge player before we moved him to the middle, wasn't he? So, yeah, he is playing that that Gareth Ellis role, if you like. But, yeah, like, he did impress me with a few things he did last night, did Manu Mau. I think we would like to see a little bit more from him, but it's getting him in the right areas as well, and obviously having your half back to put him through those holes. And, like I say, hold sweat on it as an attacking force, you know, collectively. I'm not going to single out individuals. I know a few people had a pop at Camp Scott last night, but it's a team game, innit? You win together, you lose together. I know it's a massive cliche, but we just went at it as a team. There was just no spark there in attack, as I say. It was very conservative, very flat. And I think it's just a little bit tough to pick on, as I say, individuals. But like I say, the way Sumo did impress as well. I was impressed with Fnua. Satire seems to be, you know, he's bordering Carlos Tumavavi territory now. I mean, Carlos is the god. He's my absolute forever and probably always will be. But Satire is getting dangerously close to that now. He's an absolute wrecking ball.
And he's out of contract at the end of the year.
Get him signed up. Isn't that scary, though? Like you say, with the deadline, that's obviously passed. Agents, whatever they're called these days, agents, they can go, obviously, shop their client around now, can't they? And obviously, I don't know what's been discussed in-house. I'm not privy to that information, but you'd like to think that Satai is on the forefront of James Clark's and Adam Pearson and Brett Hodgson's plans for the future, because he's been sensational for weeks on end now. I mean, what are we now, 8 games into the season? Don't think he's had a bad game yet. Don't think he's even had a bad stint yet. He's been phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's exactly what we said, you know, back in one of the first podcasts we did this season, right? We said, you know, about the power of starting him and the message that it sends him as a player. You know, you're a starting prop. That meant a lot to him. You could see his chest swelled. You know, just the first time he took the pitch as a starting player, it looks a completely different proposition. Completely, you know, he's a wrecking ball, but he gets through a lot of tackling, and he's got an offload in him as well. But for me, it's the speed of his play of the balls. He lands on his hands and his knees. He gets up quickly. He plays the ball quickly, and we go forward off the back of him. You know, he makes 15 meters, 20 meters a carry, but then we make an extra 15 or 20 after that because it's a quick play of the ball. You know, every team needs a couple of those. And, you know, him and Sal start this season have been great.
Absolutely. I always remember, mate, when Sydney Roosters came over to UK for the World Cup Challenge, they played St. Helens, and they obviously won the game pretty comfortable. I think it was something like 4-1, 28-6, something, you know, something along the lines of that. And Trent Robinson came on the Sky Sports cameras after the game, and he gave this massive insight. Everyone was like, oh my God, this is amazing. You know, this is like a reinventing the wheel type of, you know, insight to the game. And he was talking about, you know, ruck speed, quick play of the balls and stuff like that. And every time a Super League side plays an NRL side, it's exactly the same. It's also the same when an England or Great Britain side plays Australia. They are so much quicker around the ruck. And then we scratch our heads and think, why is this? Why do we beat them? And then you look at a Super League game and you see the problems at the ruck and then think, well, there's your problem, guys. That is it. They've got better, you know, little things like that, better play of the balls. They just perfect that area of the game. They've got better distribution and they just nail those little things. And I think it's there in black and white, but yet we persist. Referees persist in the UK, and I don't want to go down a refereeing bashing road again, although it is very easy with what's happening in the game right now on both sides of the world. But they need to sort that ruck out. It's a joke.
The reason that it was sorted out in the NRL, Dan, was because we had two referees. Because you had a referee policing the ruck. You know, so we had a 6-week period where every single ruck infringement was blown and players learned and stopped it. And it started to creep back in over here again. Because, you know, the six again and everything is a cop-out for the referee now. And it kind of compensates for the fact that we've only got one referee because we've got no one refereeing the ruck. So, I mean, I'll get on a massive rant about this a bit later when we go to the NRL and we talk about the absolute farce that was the Magic Weekend because of this crackdown on head-high tackles. But the fact that we've only got one referee over here now, when we used to have two, has meant that the players got used to one style of play. And now they've adapted to another style of play. And they're really exploiting the referees, which is why we have to have crackdowns and why we have to have mid-season changes of policy and all this kind of crap. It's because players and coaches are smart and they're getting away with murder. And it's being led, as usual, by the Melbournes and the Sydney Roosters. And, you know, people like that who have got savvy coaches that know exactly how to control again, whether that's speed it up when they need to speed it up or slow it down when they need to slow it down. You know, it's been the same for years and years and years. And unfortunately in England, where the referee stocks aren't as high probably, it's just been allowed to fester as the ruck. You know, and when you do get a team that gets on a bit of a roll, the opposition team know that the only thing that they can do to stop them is to lay on in the tackle and maybe give away a penalty or maybe even give away a sin binning. But it's
going to
save them for a certain amount of time, you know?
Yeah, I think, like we said at the start with Catalans, it's just, you test the referee to see what you get away with, don't you? And then and then literally you push that to the border of the legalities. And that's what you do. You know, that's what every team does. Yeah. No matter if you're playing Sunday morning in the park or if you're playing Soul League or the NRL. And yeah, it's just a shame how it panned out. Obviously, Catalans getting the better of all. And it's the first time where we've seen, like I say, a laboured LFC performance, because even a defeat at Wigan 2 weeks ago was banging the contest. You know, the performance was, you know, like I say, it was there, the defence was there, obviously the effort level. And I'm not going to, you know, question anything like that at all, because, you know, defensively we were sound. I mean, Catalans didn't get a look in until they, obviously when they went ahead in the 69th minute, they didn't, and then the first try, obviously, kicker hit the post. Cassiano got, obviously, a favourable bounce and he, you know, dives over under the sticks. But they didn't really look like scoring up until then. So I think, like I say, all have the chances to race ahead and, you know, go 2-3 scores, you know, in the lead. But obviously they didn't take those chances. Catalans eventually got theirs. But it wasn't like it was a, you know, lack of effort or a lack of defensive resolve or anything like that. It was just unfortunate one of those nights. And obviously the challenge now for Hull is how they respond. And, you know, there's no better way to go and show that this side obviously has involved by going to Leeds on Sunday and getting a result. Because, you know, that's not one of our happy hunting grounds. I know we've obviously won there twice this year against Huddersfield and Wigan in the Cup. But against Leeds in Super League at Headingley, it's not been a pretty place to play for us.
No. Well, apart from the opening round last year, which was probably the last great Ransom performance, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But the I mean, and Leeds are a basket case. Let's not forget, Leeds are in you'd like to think, well, if you're a Leeds fan, you'd like to think they're in a transitional season or a transitional phase. What they actually are is crap. You know, this whole thing with Kyle Eastmond is incredible. You know, he signs in an absolute blaze of glory and then 2 games later says, sorry guys, I don't think I can reach the heights that I used to, I'm off. Jesus.
Who's the coach,
I mean,
again?
If that was any other thing, well, it's bloody Agar. That is the Agar effect writ large, isn't it?
It's like,
it really is.
It brings back some bad memories, mate, doesn't it? When you think, looking at Leeds like now, is like looking at all 10 years ago.
Yeah, it is. Scary. I mean, if you're going to hit Leeds any time, I think the nice time to hit them is when they've just won again. Because they'll sit back on their laurels and think, oh, that's all we need to do now. You know, that's great. They don't seem to me to be a team that's hungry for success. They seem to me to be a team that want to do the bare minimum to get by. And you've got a whole team that are quite the opposite of that, that are willing to put in the hard yards. I don't want to stick my neck out too much, but I would expect us to win that game against Leeds.
Yeah.
Especially after losing to Cowans.
Yeah, absolutely. You'd like to think, all with their attitude and mentality this year, we'll respond and obviously show all those components that we've seen this year, but obviously also show a little bit more with the ball. To finish on the whole game then, a big moment was Chris Sattar's sin bin, and it did coincide with Carlos Tumavavi's head knock as well, which I haven't actually mentioned yet, but that was a huge moment in the game. So when Carlos went off, they all did a reshuffle. Yeah, and you lose Sattar as well. You end up with Cam Scott on the left edge. As I say, a couple moved across, and there's a bit of a reshuffle there. And obviously, Catalans obviously exploited that, and fair play, because that's what good sides do. They exploit weaknesses in their opposition. But yeah, the big talking point is Sattar's sin bin. And this ties in, obviously, with your impeding Magic Weekend NRL rant. But what is Chris Sattar supposed to do there? He's a massive bloke, 120 kilos, and a player slips, literally slips into him, and he catches him, you know, on his noggin. But it's not Chris Sattar's fault. It's I get it, and I do like the way Rugby League looks after players now with the head knocks, the HIA. The head injury assessments, HIAs, whatever you're going to call them, that's great. I love that. I know teams do milk it sometimes to try, you know, get a free interchange, and like everything, you can try and manipulate the law to your benefit. But overall, I think we get that right, because it's so important to, you know, players' health is obviously paramount. But we've gone too far with it now, and that Sattar sin bin was a perfect example. And I must admit, I haven't watched all the NRL games this weekend yet, but I've seen the stats, and 14 yellow cards and 3 red cards in 8 games. Come on, we are scrutinising that too much, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and again, one of those was for a hit on Tedesco that was exactly the same. He slips going into the tackle. And in fact, that's about the third time this year that that's happened, because the way he runs, he kind of barrels through, head down, shoulders hunched. And, you know, when he's trying to sidestep, you know, and especially on that Brisbane pitch that had already had 6 matches on it or whatever it was, he slips and he slips into the tackle, and the guy just caught him around the head. But any contact with the head at all was at the least a penalty, probably a sin bin, and at the most a sending off this weekend. And this is all born out of a desire to stop head injuries and stuff, because Peter Vlandis is absolutely terrified that there's going to be a class action with ex players suing the game, like there was in the NFL in America with the American. The American football league. So, you know, there was about $1 billion there, I think, which was the class action that they've had to kind of pay out and everything to ex-players that have had concussion injuries and all the rest of it. So they're basically saying, we have to get this right, and we have to get it right now, because in 10 years we're going to get this class action, and there won't be a spot in 10 years because of this.
But it's a contact spot. You know, these things happen. If you slip into a tackle, if I slip into you, and you catch me on my head, it's not your fault, is it? I've put myself in that position from slipping over. We know the risks. Players know the risks.
Let me put it in an Australian context for you, though, right? New South Wales is the most litigious state in the world after California. More people get sued, and more people sue other people in New South Wales than any other state or territory in the world other than California. So, literally, right, there's a thing over here called the Responsible Service of Alcohol, the RSA. Right? You cannot work in a bar, you can't work in a club, you can't work in a nightclub, you can't work at the bar at a stadium unless you have this certificate saying that you have done this course, the Responsible Service of Alcohol. Right? Part of the Responsible Service of Alcohol is telling people that they can't have any more when they look drunk. Right? Now, I ran pubs in England. I worked in the alcohol industry my entire life. Now, when I came over here and I had to do this course, they told me, you know, you've got to cut people off, you've got to say no more and all the rest of it. I was like, don't they get upset? Well, yeah, of course we get upset, but you've got to tell them no more. And the reasoning is, over here, there's no real kind of onus on the individual to protect themselves. It's all on the owner of the building that the problem happens in. So if you get drunk in Australia and you fall off a bar stool and bang your head, it's the bar owner's fault for not training the staff properly. It's the member of staff that gave you the last drink's fault. and it's the and then it's the immediate line manager of that person. It's not your fault because you got pissed and fell off the stool. It's the bar staff and the manager and the owner that get done. And it's the same over here with any personal injury thing. It's the same over here with rugby league. So, you know, if a player gets done, it's the sport's fault. If the player gets a bad head injury, it's the sport's fault.
That's nuts. That is backwards.
Honestly, crazy. But it's the way it is. And that's why Volandis has brought this out over the weekend. Now, admittedly, it was badly handled. And it's been... You, if you do these things by degrees, and you don't do it at round 10 of the NRL, you don't do it at Magic Weekend, where, you know, supposedly there's going to be more people watching because the concept's fantastic and blah, 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 blah. And Foxtel did an absolute ripper job of getting all the games on, and Channel 9 did a good job when they did theirs. You know, everyone watching it, and all people are talking about is sin bins and sending offs. If you're going to do this, you do this at the start of the season. Or you do, you start it in pre-season friendly so players get used to it. You don't do it on the highest profile round of the NRL so far, and this close to the this close to state of origin as well. Because now you've got players that have been sent off that are going to miss origin. Papali, or whatever you want to call him now, the Canberra player's going to miss origin. First game of origin because of this, because he got sent off. I mean, admittedly, his was a nasty one. He'd probably been sent off without it being a crackdown weekend. But, you know, he's out of origin one. He's accepted a 3-game suspension.
Which is absolutely... I suppose, like you say, I mean, how many times though have we said, what do you have to do in the NRL to get a red card? You actually literally have to kill someone, because we've seen some mates that were thinking,
obviously, be careful what you wish for.
Because
you've been saying it for long enough.
There's no, you know? There's no balance now, though.
Five matches.
Adam Carr was
standing there. Maguire grabbed hold of him and did a hip drop on him, you know, so landed on the back of his legs. 5 matches. From the Dragons, 5 games for hitting Pappenhausen. It's not only have they sent them off, but they've given massive suspensions as well. So yeah, I don't know. We will see whether this changes anything. The problem is, you stick a lazy arm out because you're tired and you're under fatigue, you're going to catch someone.
This is the thing, isn't it, with your set restarts.
Yeah, exactly. But how do you? The thing is, there's a difference between careless and intentional.
Yeah.
You know, but how do you police intent? You can't. You can't police intent.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, that's why. You know, I reckon within. But well, by the end of the season, they'll be talking about 5-minute sin bins.
another crazy rugby league initiative.
Yeah, honestly, I reckon they will, because at one stage there was one game this weekend where it was 12 against 11. You know, one sent off, one in the bin from each team.
Yeah.
You used to talk about that in hushed terms, you know, when, you know, wow, you know, Hull played Australia in 1986, and 3 players sin binned at once, and all the rest of it, wow. Gosh, it happened in every game this weekend.
Yeah, I think there was literally every one. Game. There was one which didn't have a card, that was Parramatta in New Zealand. The rest of them had at least one yellow, and in some cases up to 4 and one red.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable.
But all because they've decided to do it and make an example of it this round.
Yeah.
Now, if you remember, I went on a bit of a rant a couple of years ago when they had the huge thing about lying on the tackle and professional fouls and all the rest of it, and they policed that for a couple of rounds, and then it just kind of went away. The players kind of just stopped doing it, and the referees eased off a little bit. But this looks like it's here to stay, this one.
Yeah, unfortunately so. But you're absolutely bang on the money, though, you say, like, bringing these things in mid-season. It was the same problem last year. After the NRL came back end of May, they introduced the set restarts. UK Super League followed... Sorry, the European Super League. That's contested in the north of England, M62 corridor, and one team in the south of France. They did the same when they came back in August. And it's like, okay, you've played 7 games in the NRL case, 2 games, you've come back, you've had your lockdowns, you've obviously started your season, now you're changing the roles, changing the goalposts. It's like, oh, for God's sake, boys. But we always do that, don't we? And the set restart now, they coincide with some of these hits. Like you just said, the intent v malicious thing. Sometimes you just do get a shot which is foul play. And that's part and parcel of rugby league. We see it from time to time. It happens. You know, we deal with it, we move on. But no one's telling me that it's not a coincidence that you get set restarts, you get players that are under more fatigue, they then put a lazy arm out, because it does happen, a lazy attempt at a tackle, a swinging arm. Yep. It's not malicious, it's just literally from under the strains of fatigue. And that's what set restarts are doing. It's a simple equation, isn't it? It's not hard to figure out. And
yeah, exactly. And, you know, if you want to stop it, if you want to stop it in the ruck over here, bring two referees back. You know, because then you've got someone policing HIA a lot quicker. Because at the moment, someone gets hit in the head, they could just shake the head and run off. And then it's only after a doctor's watched the tackle and gone, actually, you might want to go out and have a look at him, and then take him off for an HIA 3 minutes later. Now, that's when your damage is going to be done to a player. When his head's not right and he's thrown himself into a tackle and he's not 100% balanced and all the rest of it because he's had a little bit of a minor head knock. That's when your problem is. If you've got an extra ref there policing the ruck, and I was the first to say about Volandi's saying, you know, he saved the game, he's brought it back to one rest and he's speeded everything up and everything's fantastic, blah, 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 blah. But I honestly think it's a little bit of be careful what you wish for, I think. I think they've maybe sped it up too much, and now the fatigue factor has come in too much, and then you're getting these ridiculous, poor attempts at tackles because players are just throwing themselves in with no technique and also with no care and attention to their own health, never mind health, yeah, and the player that they're tackling.
No, it's absolutely bang on. Unfortunately, that's the way it's going. But at the Magic Weekend in the NRL, obviously there was a few good moments on the field. Penrith Panthers making it 10 in a row. Obviously, you wrote a blog about them for the Up the Cream. How much gritted teeth and resolve did you have to do that?
Well, I did a bit. I mean, look, it was it wasn't a blog about Penrith Panthers. It was a blog about youth structure.
No, it was a blog about how good Penrith Panthers are.
I just used the Panthers as an example of how well they do it.
Because of how good they are.
But yeah, they were fantastic again. They were fantastic again. They're a really good team this year. Their next couple of games, they could go through to the Origin period unbeaten. I mean, they've got the Bunnies this week. You'd think that they'd beat the Bunnies, although the Bunnies are blowing hot and cold. Then they play the Bulldogs. I mean, that'll be a cricket score. And then they play the Tigers. That'll be a cricket score. You know, so you can't see them losing any time soon. You know, they don't play any of the big teams probably until Roosters mid-June. So you'd think they'll probably be 14 or 15 games unbeaten by then.
Yeah. The Origin period will be testing, because I think if the Blues don't pick Nathan Cleary and Jerome Luwais, the halfbacks, then something's wrong, because them two are absolutely phenomenal. Cleary's on a different planet.
They'll definitely pick Cleary.
But Jerome Luwais just as good. Luwais phenomenal. Brilliant player.
They might put Luwais on the bench and they might pick Jack Whiten, although he's not been playing particularly well for Canberra Raiders, who had a very lucky win this week against the Bulldogs. I mean, that last 10 minutes of that game was insane. I mean, they had a man sent off and a man in the bin and managed to score two tries right at the death to beat a Bulldog side that they were losing. I mean, at one stage it was 12-10, I think. And they managed, with players off the pitch, they managed to score two tries in 3 minutes. And then the Bulldogs scored a last try to make it look a little bit more respectable at 18-20. But they were, they had Whiten in the bin and Papali sent off. And then, as soon as Whiten came back on, he just sparked them back into life. There's going to be two tries in 3 minutes. It was unbelievable.
Absolutely. Obviously, big news in Australia coming out right now, from a Hull FC persuasion, is that Albert Kelly's been picked in the Brisbane Broncos squad to play, obviously, in the NRL this weekend.
Yeah, which is incredible, actually. And good on him, because he's done it the hard way. He's gone and played for South Slogan Magpies and been very, very quiet and just got around his job and everything. He had a bad injury a couple of weeks ago. He had part of his ear torn off. He had a lot of stitches in his ear, so he'll probably be playing looking like he's, looking like a First World War trench victim. As it looks, he's probably going to have a scrum cap on and his ear probably bidding a real massive bandage on, like he's been playing the last couple of weeks. But, him and Milford played really well a couple of weeks ago when they played for South London together. They've dropped Milford, and it's going to be It's going to be Tyson Gamble and Kelly. Now, Gamble, for me, he's a really cocky player. He's a bit of a Reynolds or a bit of a Connor, but he's got nothing to be cocky about because they're losing. You know, he gets up in people's faces and had a go at them, but they're losing by 50 points every match. So I don't get him, really. Hopefully Kelly will be a bit of steadying hand for him. It's a hell of a gamble for the Broncos. He hasn't played an NRL game since, what, 2014? And he's been playing second grade and, you know, wasn't even in their top 21 players starting the season. So they've had to ask for salary cap dispensation to even get him in the squad.
Yeah, coming off the back of a hamstring injury as well. I think he only played five or six games for Hull last year as well. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll obviously be watching in Hull. See how he goes out. Obviously, we hope he goes well. Obviously, he's still a cult hero over here for what he did in his four seasons. Obviously, the chicken nugget sensation that came over on a free, pissed on the bonfire at everyone at Rovers. Thank you very much. Won the Challenge Cup. I can still picture that image. I think it was on a front cover of the cream actually when we won at Wembley for the second time with just Kelly raising the trophy above his head. Yeah, thank you, lads. Cheers.
Yeah.
Another one bites the dust. But
they kind of, over here, they're really honing on the fact that he was dropped from training for being overweight. But, I mean, the problem was he came over from England with his entire family. He sat in hotel quarantine for 14 days where he couldn't train, he couldn't do anything, and all he's doing is eating, you know, the food that they're giving him from, you know, he's in a top-class hotel because he's playing for an NRL side. So he's, you know, he's ordering room service. And, you know, when he turned up to training, he was overweight, and they said, right, you train with the reserves until you're at weight.
What do you expect?
2 weeks later, he's at weight, and he's setting the life up. Yeah, exactly. But over here, it's, he was banished from training for being overweight. And he wasn't.
That's the problem, isn't it? Sensationalist headlines from the media. It's like, I tell you what, it is a good one. Nathan Cleary, after the game for the Penrith Gold Coast Titan game, literally went up in the stand and spent literally 20, 30 minutes with fans that couldn't get down to the pitch after the game. Now, how good is that? Yeah, that doesn't get talked about, does it? It's, yeah, I think sometimes we go for the, like you say, the sensationalist headline.
See a Soliola, you know, found out about a Canberra fan that's got a really horrible genetic disease and has been putting 10% of his own wages into a fund for them, you know, to kind of find a cure and stuff. It's stuff you don't hear, you know, and it's stuff that we need to, as a sport, we need to do better. We need to tell people that this stuff's happened.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. Speaking of, obviously, fans, Super League, welcome back. Five games with fans back in attendance. Interestingly, four away teams won, with obviously Catalans beating Hull, Rovers beat Cass, Wigan beat Lee, and Huddersfield, who were obviously starting to, you know, make a few heads turn now with a few decent performances. They went to Wyre and beat them. Obviously, Greg Inglis featured again. He's got 2 tries in 2 games now. So, yeah, that was interesting that you get fans back and four away teams win. So, yeah, good old rugby league, yeah. The last 30 games, obviously, me being a little stats nerd. The last 30 games at the KCOM Stadium, it stretches back to mid-2019. 11 wins, 1 draw and 18 defeats. That's a home record and that's like bottom half of the table form for home games alone. Factoring away games.
In that period, we've hit the finals every year.
It's crazy, isn't it? It just shows, I mean, literally 2019, the reason we, you know, where we were, was literally because of our away form. I think we ended up winning like 6 or 7 on the trot, which is unheard of for an old team. A predominantly struggle, you know, away from home. And yeah, weird one. But obviously, I know games last year, I think we only played 5 at home. So most of them were obviously on the road. But yeah, these are actually, as I say, home games at the KCOM Stadium. 30 games, 11 wins, 1 draw, 18 defeats. So yeah, it's not great. And I think it's probably no surprise with what's going on right now with the Kcom Stadium situation, with the obviously stadium management company, and what they're doing to Hull FC right now is an utter disgrace. It was very interesting to read Adam Pearson's programme comments, and yeah, I mean, it speaks for itself, doesn't it? I mean, to actually have the cheek to charge Hull FC 700 grand, despite the fact they only played their five games, and literally some of the way they go about asking for money is what gets me, and it'll all come out eventually. I know Adam wants people to be very tight-lipped on it, on the actual facts right now, because obviously there's ongoing legal battles. But what he did publish, as I say, was that figure and the, again, you know, best part of 50 grand or whatever it was to actually play against Catalans and move that game on top of what they pay every year to actually play at that stadium. Yeah.
And they couldn't use that 50 grand to bring some contract players, could they? Or to make sure that it was running water in the bathrooms. You know, that's disgusting.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a disgrace.
Yeah, I mean, walking up the West, I was in the West Upper last night, me and my old man, and he was knackered, the grand old age of 62, bless him. Getting up all those stairs, it was blowing. But literally, we got to the top and the concourse was just infested in it. It was disgusting. I didn't actually go to the toilet last night. Luckily, my bladder can still hold for a couple of hours. But seeing a lot of people that did, and they actually say that there's no running water, you know, no hot water when the water was actually working, no, you know, dodgy toilet roll, no sanitary bins, nothing to wash your hands with when they preach about COVID all the time. And obviously, these aren't digs at all. These are digs at the SMC, and it's, you know, it's very important to obviously reiterate that. But yeah, it's shocking from their point of view. Where's the duty of care?
Straight away, you're dead right. Straight away, you know, we should be reporting the SMC there for, you know, for dereliction of duty. We should be saying to them, well, that's not safe. And if it's, you know, it's a basic thing that you have to have running water and you have to have this and you have to have a place clean. You know, if they've decided not to do that, we should be reporting them to health and safety.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so straight out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, it's probably going to sour the relationship even more, but Jesus, I mean, it's already fractured and damaged. It's not going to get any better anytime soon, is it? So, sod it. Please report the bastards.
Exactly.
You know, the Alans are a cancer in that city, an absolute cancer. They've acid stripped the soccer club, and they've basically got the claws into the stadium, and you know, they wanted to make it bigger than this, and they wanted to do this, and they wanted that part of it, and they wanted half of West Park to be part of it, and all the rest of it. They've been turned down on every time they've tried to properly own everything. There's always been some sort of check and balance to say, no, you can't do it. And they've literally just gone, well, sod you then. We're going to play hardball, and we're just going to throw our toys out the pram. And they've just dug their heels in, and now it's spite. That's what it is. They've tried to sell the club how many times? They've tried to flog off Hull City so many times, and they've always just dug their heels in and shown that kind of childish mentality every single time. And, you know, the people have just got wise to it, and now they've just been left to their own devices. And that's what hurts them more than anything, is the fact that they had the chance to sell. They held out for more money, and now the place isn't worth 10 to what it was when they were in the Premier League or in the First Division. Championship.
Yeah, I completely, utterly agree with that, mate. Absolutely, you know, bang on. Like you say, it's a council-owned facility for the people of Hull. The council employ the SMC to operate, you know, that asset. And the lack of maintenance is shocking, and surely that has to be a breach of obligation. I mean, surely there must be some route that Hull can go down and report on, because that is... Yeah. That is shocking. You know, like you say, what the times that we're in right now, obviously COVID, the, you know, pandemic and what have you, we're just coming out of that in the UK. And to have that and preach about, you know, wearing your masks and sanitising your hands and, you know, being careful who you're supposed to, you know, engage with once you're in the ground, you know, sticking within your bubbles, not leaving your seat unless you need the toilet or if you're going.
But, I mean, isn't that classic Alan, though, isn't it? You know? That is classic of the Alans. They've basically gone, right, you know, like, we're going to change the name of the soccer club. People don't want it. We'd rather, you know, City till I die. Well, you can die as soon as you like. Right? Doesn't give a shit about what he says, what the consequences of his actions or his words are. Right? Hull FC need to play a home game. All right, screw you. We're going to charge another 50 grand then. And we're not going to clean anything. And, yeah, just walk in and just do it then. That's fine. Just do it. Right? Now, the consequences of that action are completely different to saying you can die as soon as you want. Is now a legal thing. Legally, the SMC has to provide a safe stadium. Now, the fact that there's this massive spotlight on everything at the moment, any gathering, because of COVID, means that if there's no hand-washing facilities, that is a health risk. That is more than, oh, we don't want to clean the seats. That is, you know, screw you, we want to paint the place amber and we're going to cover up all the black and white stuff and blah, 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 blah. That's just petulance and childishness. Not providing adequate hand-washing facilities, that's a legal thing. Now, if the council do this properly, this could actually be the straw that broke the camel's back for the SMC if they play it right. They need to get their ducks in a row, and they need to do this properly, because this could be the catalyst for change. This one thing that's happened, because it is so high profile. And because it is so important at the moment with public health and with the thing with the COVID outbreak and the sanitary, you know, the necessity of having a gathering like that, and the first gathering in years, in a year now, over a year, we have to, surely the council will look at this and go, gone. Surely.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's overshadowed what should have been. No, don't get me wrong, it's still a very special night. I know the result didn't go our way, and now we're talking all this about the SMC and obviously the state of the ground and obviously the battle to go on. But it also still, it was great to be back there as a fan. But you can't ignore this. You really can't. And, you know, it's going to be an ugly situation for the foreseeable future. It really is going to be ugly. And the fact of the matter is, the KCOM Stadium, it was built in the early 2000s for both clubs, the people of the city, by the people of the city. People bought shares to build this ground. And yeah. Hull City and Hull SC are supposed to be on an equal pedestal, no matter what any smart ass can say on social media. It's a fact that they were both brought in as tenants of that stadium. May I add that Hull SC signed up long before Hull City did to play at that ground.
Oh, yeah.
And they were supposed to compete, you know, their fixtures, Hull City and Hull FC, without the interference of the other, as equal tenants. That is not paying out right now. And obviously, Adam is very worried that the club's stance right now as an equal tenant at the KCOM Stadium is generally under threat. That's unthinkable, isn't it, to actually think that? That's the way it's gone right now. It's disgusting. Absolutely. And it needs calling out. I mean, this is where the local media, you know, you want your radio, you want your paper, you want them screaming at them.
The biggest dereliction of duty that there's ever been there was the council allowing the Allens to get their hands on the SMC.
Yeah.
Because that is a clear conflict of interest. You can't have the owners of one club running the SMC when the other club's sitting there. Do you know? You can't. The SMC should be completely there for the benefit of the council and the benefit of the city. The council should run it. You know, it's a profit-making... you'd think that it'd be a profit-making facility.
It was.
You know, it was exactly...
When they ran it, it was.
So the council should run it. You know, surely if it's a profit-making facility, the council should be able to go, with all good conscience, we're not putting taxpayers' money into this. It's making money for us, and we're paying people a living wage to look after it. You know, the council should run it themselves. The fact that there's allowed the Allens to get the fingers into the SMC is the biggest farrago of shit I've ever seen in my life. It's just ridiculous. But we need to, now we need to fight back. And like I say, hopefully last night, as bad as it was and as distasteful as it was, that petulance that they've shown by not cleaning the place before a game of a league game of importance, it's not friendly, you know, it's a league game. The fact that they've not cleaned it, the fact that they've been derelict in health and safety, mate, it's got to be the catalyst for change. It has to be.
The ground's not even 20 years old. It shouldn't be in that state. I'm not going to say it should be, you know, brand new, sparkling and shiny, but it shouldn't be decaying like it is right now.
No, it shouldn't. And, you know, we all laughed at Rovers because, you know, they knocked down the old Craven Park and moved into that new, you know, breeze block city over there at Poorhouse Lane. And, you know, within 10 years, that was crumbling and falling apart, you know, because they didn't look after it, because they didn't know how to look after it. Because, and then the council bought it back off them and then gave it back to them for a peppercorn rent and then bought it back again. They've been bailed out more times than the Titanic bloody engine room. But, you know, it just seems like, you know, we had the perfect situation. And in fact, when the case thing was built, I remember talking to Shane Richardson and him saying we got the deal of the century. It was very, very heavy weighted for both teams to make a lot of money out of the case. The council were putting in a lot of money as regards, you know, facility and running it and all the rest of it. If Hull got a crowd of, you know, 10,000-15,000, they were making a lot more money than they would have made out of the same amount walking into the Boulevard, you know, a lot more money. But, you know, all things must end by the looks of it. And as soon as the Allens got their hand into it, because let's face it, they didn't want to be chairman, they're property people. You know, their interest in it is as a commodity, not as a sporting thing. No matter how many times he appears with a Tigers, you know, scarf around his neck or whatever, they're property developers primarily, and that's where their interest is.
Yeah, absolutely. They don't give, you know, they don't give a damn
no.
to Hull City, and they've shown that. They don't give a damn to Hull FC either, evidently. And yeah, I think to summarise that, just literally whatever the club stance is, we've got to get behind them as a supporter base. It's as simple as that. And you've got to put pressure on the council, put pressure on the media to expose it. And the council need to grow a backbone. It's as simple as that. You know, they all scream for our votes all the time and say, oh, please vote for me. We'll do something about this now and put them in the place, because it's disgusting what they're doing. It's absolutely disgusting. And like I say, it needs calling out. It's...
Don't get me started on the whole Daily Mail,
though. Well, because, yeah.
I mean, Reach PLC, who own all the local newspapers now, are absolutely appalling.
Yeah.
And, you know, whereas that used to be a really good bastion of local news and all the rest of it, the whole Daily Mail, and now it's a shadow of its former self.
Yeah, I agree. The news section is cancerous. It really is. I like the sports coverage. I know a lot of people in that sports department, and they are good people. You know, Will Jackson, James Smales, they are good people. And obviously, Phil Buckingham's left now, but he was a good bloke as well. You know, the sports desk is, like I say, full of genuine blokes who have got Hull's interests at heart. They love nothing more than to champagne our local sporting clubs. But yeah, it's a shame the way the news section has gone. It really is. Disappointing, but yeah, they really don't need to stand up now, because this has gone beyond the joke, and it's gone to the stage now where I'd even go as far as saying it's harassment, it's bullying, and something needs to be done about it.
Absolutely. So yeah, let's see what happens. I mean, yeah, it's a shame that we've had to even speak about this, because it shouldn't be an issue, should it? And it is. And let's hope that it gets sorted sooner rather than later.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not good.
No, not. I mean, so much for the people's stadium there. But, yeah. It really is. It's depressing, to be honest, to be actually talking about things like this when we should be championing the fans' return, how good it was to our old faithful, and chance to come on you all, and obviously the obligatory, get him onside, referee. I've had a few times last night. But, I mean, we should be talking about, you know, things like that. But, no, the SMC have obviously dominated the Newells and the state of the ground, and it's not good. And we'll see how much that changes in time for the next home game against Huddersfield Giants, which is the 25th of June. So they've got, you know, 5 weeks now to get their house in order. Yeah. I don't even want to think about what the state will be in 5 weeks if it's left to go unattended. But, yeah. Moving on to something a little bit lighter then is our Hull FC NRL/Australian club connection. And we've gone for the Western Suburbs this week.
Yes, obviously this stops 2001 when they merged with Melbourne Tigers to form the West Tigers. We'll do the West Tigers next week or whatever. But the Western Suburbs Magpies in Hull FC have had, it's probably a longer list than you'd think. And a lot of the players that play for the Magpies and Hull, both black and white teams, the only two black and white teams in the league, don't forget, they can be split into two kind of categories, really. Well, probably three categories. English players that played over here for Western Suburbs. Players that you more often think about as being connected with other Aussie clubs, but actually had a couple of seasons, probably at the end of their career at Western Suburbs, because they tended to be a place where people went to finish their career right at the back end. And then players from many, many years ago that have massive names to conjure with. So let's go down the list. Des Hasler finished his career at Western Suburbs Magpies after he finished at Hull. More often, you know, connected with Manly, but he certainly did play a couple of seasons for Western Suburbs. As did Craig Coleman as well. Played for Hull under Brian Smith, 88 season. Brief stint, went home around Christmas. His organisational genius was indelible in that side for the rest of the season, even though he wasn't there. He was that little midfield general that the team needed. And when he left, we put Phil Windley into halfback, and Windley was twice the player that he was before Coleman was there because he learned so much from him. His partnership with Gary Devolte at the Leeds forward was something to be seen. The runaround move that scored plenty of tries. He was a great up player, was Craig Coleman. Andrew Hick, who was one of the Gateshead contingent that came down in 2000. Shane McMenemy also had a season at Western Suburbs, as did Stephen Kearney as well, two heroes in 2005. Damien McGarry, who was in that Premiership winning team of 91. Ivan Henjak, halfback that played for all in the mid-90s, and ended up coaching Brisbane as well. Scott Gale, who we spoke about in the Balmain context last week as well, and Graham McKay, who again, that magnificent drop goal practically from the halfway line against the New Zealand Tories in the last ever game at the Bolivar. Other than that, Brett Hodgson, LFA coach, had one season with the Western Suburbs Magpies before they merged and it became a West Tiger, and he actually played for Parramatta as well, did Hodgson for a season or two. Then English players that played for Western Suburbs Magpies, Schofield and Crooks actually both had stints. Schofield again probably better known over here as a Balmain player, but did come back to Australia a couple of years afterwards and played for Western Suburbs in 89. Lee Crooks played for Western Suburbs 87, so he was a Leeds player at that time when he played for Western Suburbs Magpies. Then, going back even further than that, two names to conjure with. Seth Fifield, who's got 80 tries in about 230 games for Hull, ended up, he was an ex-West player and also coached West as well. One of the old players around the Second World War, very, very good centre, who we built a team around, more or less in the immediate post-Second War period. But the biggest one is Herb Gilbert, who's the first overseas captain to lift the Challenge Cup in 2014 when he captained Hull.
1914.
1914. Jesus. Sorry. 100 years before that, I do apologise. In 1914, signed for Hull for £450, which these days would be about 400,000.
Yeah.
He's actually listed as Kangaroo number 4. Because in the first ever test match against New Zealand, he played in the right centre position. So he's listed as Kangaroo number 4. That back line that we had back then was incredible, with Jack Harrison and obviously Billy Batten, and Jimmy Devereux, who came over with him as well. In fact, Devereux and Herb Gilbert are listed as Kangaroos 3 and 4. So we were very, very lucky to get them. They signed on immediately after the 2000, again, the 1911 Kangaroos tour. So, an absolute legend of Western Suburbs and also of LFC and Gilbert.
I love that. Also, that 1914 Cup winning side, obviously the first ever Hull FC Challenge Cup winning side, like you say, featuring Jack Harrison, Al Francis, so the two wingers both got the tries out there. I think it was Wakefield at Thrumall in Halifax, beat him 6-0, 2-1 converted tries. But Billy Batten is literally, he's a rugby league immortal in the UK. He's actually, Johnny Whiteley has starred Hull FC's only member of the Rugby League Hall of Fame. Billy Batten was an absolute superstar. I mean, actually, Hull FC used to advertise banners around the boulevard around Hazel Road saying Batten is certain to play, and it used to boost the crowd by about 50%.
That was my great
used to
walk around with a sandwich board on saying Batten and Gilbert
play
today. Yeah, there you go.
And he turned down Man United, Manchester United, obviously giant football club in the UK, to turn them down to come sign for Hull FC. Like I say, an absolute superstar, but an absolute amazing bloke as well. I remember the West Yorkshire village where he's from, there was obviously a mill strike, and he ended up literally paying for the food for his whole village to eat during one of the strikes. And it just shows the type of bloke he is. It's like a Marcus Rashford, but from the 1920s.
Absolute legend, and as hard as bloody nails as well. And in fact, they had to change the rules because of Batten. He had this thing where he'd been a bit of a hurdler in his youth, and he would try and jump over players as they tried to tackle him, which led to a few players getting studs full in the face. And they actually changed the rules to stop players lifting their foot in the tackle because of Billy Batten, because he was an absolute legend. And a mark of back then, the way the game was played, not so much how many tries he scored, but how many tries his winger scored.
Mm.
That's the actual mark of how good he was, breaking a tackle and feeding his winger. Just an absolute legend of the game.
Absolutely. Yeah, brilliant. Mm. Herb Gilbert as well, like you say, first Australian captain to come over here. Obviously with Jimmy Devereux as well. Devereux had sad post life after all. I'm pretty sure he lost a leg working on the Sydney Harbour Bridge, which is it's a bit of a come down that, hasn't it?
From being Steve Darmody, who was the third one of the three Aussies that signed for us, he was a goal kicking second row forward. He lost a foot in the trenches in Flanders in 1917, and but then had a full life after that, and ended up, I think he emigrated to England and ended up dying in Scotland, I think, Steve Darmody. But again, he's another one who's a legend over here as well, because he was the first South player to play for Australia. So when we get to South, we can talk more about Steve Darmody.
Yeah, absolutely. Good list, that, though. Very impressive.
Yeah. Not bad. that was an hour's judicious Googling. That's all good.
Yeah, it's actually good to know that we actually come prepared for these podcasts now. We even have, note lists and everything.
Yeah, I'll have to write down 1914 next time, not 2014. It's all good.
It happens, though, doesn't it? It happens to the best of us. Yeah, good stuff. Obviously, nice little history lesson. Hope we obviously can continue to do that throughout the NRL clubs, and obviously for Hull FC now it's all about responding, getting our Super League season back on track. Five tough games on the road now, but I'm pretty confident in saying that we will get it right and we will respond and we'll get a result against Leeds on the weekend.
Yep, fingers crossed, mate.
Yep, fingers crossed indeed. Thanks for your time, mate, and all the best.
Anytime.